Hey, my name's Olivia Porter, and we're listening to the How's That Cricket podcast. How's that? You
messed about, I called you up. How's that? Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of How's That, the cricket podcast with me, Ollie.
And me, Lily. That was an enthusiastic one this week, Ollie.
I'm very enthusiastic. And I'm glad you've stopped me because I've completely forgotten whose episode this is.
So you were sick last week, so it's good to see that you're back again.
Yeah, I was ill. I'm no longer ill. I'm a happy human.
I'm glad.
we're all good. Right.
Cool.
So this week we have another guest on the podcast. It was an absolute pleasure to speak to Sydney Thunder and ACT starlet Olivia Porter. Obviously, we talked about her rise through the New South Wales pathway, how she moved across to ACT, and her debut with the Thunder, all the fanfare, everything we spoke to her about, which was absolutely wonderful. So that is coming up very shortly. But we do have to ramble on about some cricket, as we always do. We've got some Big Bash to talk about. We've got some WNCL to talk about, as we always do. A couple of Stars losses, which is becoming normal, and a couple of absolutely immense strikers wins. So I think I'm just going to give you the floor at this point because, I think this Big Bash season is going well for the boys in blue.
It is, but it's been a bit here and there, which is why I'm getting a bit nervous now because it's starting to get to, you know, the crunch time where you need to win. And in order to make finals, you need to win. So starting to get a little bit nervous. Maybe hopefully we've got our losses out of the way and we, we're back into our winning grooves. But yeah, it's been interesting, that's for sure. Where we left off last week, we ended on the Melbourne Derby, which was between obviously Stars and Renegades. Renegades winning that one. The next game was not too interesting between the Heat and the Sixers. It was a no result. And then it was Thunder and Scorchers, Thunder winning by 6 wickets. Another good performance by the Thunder boys. I think they've definitely regrouped after batting not that long ago. They've definitely managed to get a couple of wins on the board there, which I'm sure they're happy with. Then moving on to the fifth. Now, this game was probably one of the best games I've seen live, and that's saying a lot because there's been some incredible strikers moments over the years. Jake Lehman's six to win the game, Travis Head's New Year's Eve sixes. There's been so many. But this was absolutely incredible. The Hurricanes putting on a total of 229 for 4 off the 20, and you think it right, like, there is not a chance we are chasing this down. Not a chance. There was a chance, and we did it. It was incredible. Matt Shaw opening the batting. He was captaining, actually, for the first time this season. I was a bit nervous for him, obviously, a former podcast guest. I've got a huge amount of respect for Matt Shaw. He's a wonderful cricketer and a wonderful person. But, you know, obviously taking the reins from Peter Siddle, who's very experienced in that area. We started with Hurricanes. Yeah, everyone was just scoring. Ben McDermott with 57, Caleb Jewell with 54, off 30 and 25, which is just crazy. And then Zach Crawley with another 54 not out and Tim David with 39 not out. It's good scores by everyone, really. Yeah, so obviously, yeah, Matt Shaw, Ryan Gibson opening the batting. Ryan Gibson back into the team after injury last year. He's back. What a chase. Matt Shaw with the winning runs. We needed a 4 to win the game and we needed a 4 for him to get his 100. And he hit a 4. Like the chances of that happening are just like, oh, you just really want it to happen for him. Sometimes it doesn't happen, but for it to actually happen was incredible. So he was 100 not out off 59 balls. Chris Lynn with a really nice put together 64 off 29. Adam Hose with 38 off 22. It was just, everything was just kind of working for the strikers. There was obviously a couple of nervous patches when Ryan Gibson went out early. And there was a review, I think, for Adam Hose, I think, earlier on. And then he not long after got dismissed. But yeah, it was absolutely crazy. And I still haven't quite got the words. So from you, as a neutral, can you tell us a little bit about the actual game? Because I'm still just in shock.
Well, yeah, I wasn't really watching it all that intently. And I just switched it on for a bit. And it was during the Hobart innings. And Caleb Jewell was just absolutely hammering it to all parts of my laid over. And I was messaging you going, you know, I've just turned the TV on. What's going on here? They were absolutely hammering you guys. And I was like, oh, this is going to be a long, long day for Lily and co. And I was looking at it going, there's no way you turn it down. Anyway, I just went away, did a few things. I checked the score and I go, hold on. There's actually a chance Adelaide can win this from here. And I watched it and I was just like, no way have I just seen that happen. No way have Adelaide just gone and won that. It was immense, really. Matt Shaw, obviously, we spoke to on the podcast. Wonderful guy. So buzzing to see him bring up 100. Adam Hoes batted well. Chris Lynn, last couple of games, he's been incredible. Like, great win for the Strikers. And the thing that I said when I came away from Adelaide Oval on New Year's Eve, I sort of said, well, you know, Adelaide lost that day, but the Strikers can really get around, or the fans can really get around the Adelaide Strikers. Like, Adelaide BBL is alive and kicking. Well, it went to another level in this game. It was insane. And it would have been great to be there, obviously, but it looked immense, like, from all the videos and all the photos that were taken on social media and whatever. It looked crazy. And from a neutral, as a fan of the Big Bash, all you can say is just go, wow, what a win.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, like, you know, in a couple of previous games, not even that long ago, like a week or so ago, we're struggling to chase down a score of 130 and not even successfully chasing down a score of 130. How on earth have we added an extra 100 onto that and chased down 229? It's incredible. And just shows that, you know, the people who you're relying on to step up can step up. And I think that's really promising for the future of the Strikers. When you lose players like Alex Carey and Travis Head, you know, you don't even have to rely on them to win games because they haven't even been here. So that's super exciting. And then obviously that transferred into the game, which happened last night as well with the Renegades. It was incredible, but we'll get to that in a moment.
Yeah, we certainly will. And the one thing I want to say very quickly before we move on from this game, and you should be expecting this question, or this point that I'm about to make. If you haven't seen this somehow circulating across social media, there is a picture of Zach Crawley on Be Real. He's taking your Be Real. It's gone to the BBC. It's gone to the Barmy Army. It's gone everywhere. And I was looking at it going, okay, you'd message me saying, okay, Zach Crawley doesn't know how to work Be Real. And you just said, oh, you know, it's funny. You just thought that me would see it, that I would see it, a few more people would see it, and that'd be it. The Barmy Army got involved. And BBC got involved. And a quick word on the Barmy Army, actually. This podcast, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the Barmy Army, first of all. So it was a nice little full circle moment to have them post you after they posted me, you know, at the beginning of 2022 almost. So that was nice, but it just went crazy. You had Sam Billings react to it. You had Ollie Pope react to it. Chris Wokes. I mean, a senior face. It was crazy, wasn't it?
I know. It's like, I just thought it was just, yeah, like you said, a couple of my friends were going to see it. It was going to be just a bit of a laugh. But the fact that Zach Crawley, I've kind of accidentally turned Zach Crawley into a bit of a meme. So if by any chance, I know he's obviously not a social media guy, but if this ever gets around to Zach Crawley, I apologize for turning you into a little bit of a laughing stock. But no, it was funny because I asked him and I was like, no, he'll be a good one to get, obviously, being like playing for England. I was like, yeah, let's do it. So I asked him and he was so confused. I was like, do you know what it is? And he was like, no, I actually don't know what it is. And I was like, right, so it would take a picture of you and it would take a picture of us at the same time on the back camera. And he was like, do you want me to just take a picture? And I was like, no, like, we can do this. So we did it. And obviously, if you haven't seen the picture, you can go and check it out on Barmy Army, BBC, my social media. It's a really funny one, but he was obviously, yeah, not prepared for it. But yeah, it is a funny one. And I'm, you know, I guess I'm happy that it's spread around a bit. It's cool to have the BBC message you and ask if they can repost your photo. But yeah, it was an odd one, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think we need to get Zach Crawley on the podcast just to let him hear your apologies for turning into a meme. Like, the thing is, he's just come off the back of an amazing tour of Pakistan with England. His team have just lost after setting 229, and now he's made into a meme, all because of your work and your insistence to get him on a Be Real. I think the trade-off has to be to get him on the podcast and deliver a personal apology to Mr. Crawley for what's happened there. But a crazy game.
Yeah, maybe I'll handwrite him a letter. Maybe I could do that.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, we'll sort something out, hopefully. But yeah, a crazy game in more ways than one for you and for the Adelaide Strikers. But probably, I would say, the best BBL game of all time. There is a plenty of contenders. I would say it's the best BBL game of all time, just purely for the chase and what it meant. But to move on from a Strikers win and happy vibes to a Stars defeat, that's the way it seems to go these days, doesn't it? So let's move on to the Stars and us losing again. yeah, this performance was better. This was a lot better. Obviously, we'd had the New Year's win a few days before, which was awesome. But yeah, this game, we'd obviously lost to the Sydney Sixers on Boxing Day as well. We put up 173 for five, which was mint. Like, this was great bit of batting. Marcus Stoinis again. Tommy Rogers falling short of his what would have been his first BBL half century. He batted really well and held out in the deep, which was a bit frustrating. Sean Abbott bowled well. Todd Murphy, who's just been included in the Australian Test squad for the first time, he bowled well and took a wicket. And Naveed took a wicket as well. And then, yeah, the Sydney Sixers. Brian Lara is someone that I want to give a shout out to, because he was like, oh, you know, speaking to James Vince, he was on the mics for Fox Cricket, and he said, oh, James Vince, love your batting. I'm expecting you to see you hit match-winning runs here. Makes 91 not out and propels the Sixers to a win. Just mental. Well batted, James Vince. 91 not out of 59. And we just couldn't quite get the job done. Another honourable defeat for the Melbourne Stars. It's been the story of our season. But when you come up against that kind of batting from a player like James Vince, you can't really complain. You just sit back and applaud, pretty much.
Yeah, he's a really class player, isn't he? He knows how to win games. And I'll always remember that one, the one moment of James Vince that'll stick in my mind is when he was on 98. They needed one run to win. The Sixers, you know where I'm going with this. They needed one run to win. He was on 98. All he needed was a two to make his 100. And Andrew Tye bowls a wide. So he can't, because they were going to win anyway with one run. But just to stop him getting his 100, I'm like, yeah, you don't know whether to laugh or cry. Because it's like, you feel bad for him. But then again, smart move from Tye. But yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like, really, like, couldn't you have just let him do it? But yeah, that was a long time ago. That was, I think, yeah, he's moved on from that.
He has.
But yeah, what sticks in my mind with him.
He ran himself out of time, obviously, because they won it on the penultimate ball of the innings, but he's come close to another 100 in the Big Bash and not got it. But another win for the Sydney Sixers there, and another defeat for the Melbourne Stars. It's been an interesting season for the Stars, where, you know, the thing is, like, we'll take the New Year's Eve win 1,000,000%. Like, we'll take that and we'll have that, because that was an awesome night. Other than that, the season hasn't gone to plan, but it is what it is. Sometimes things can't always go the way you want them to. The Renegades also got a win over the Hobart Hurricanes the following night on the 7th of January. They won that game by 6 wickets. The Scorchers had a win over the Heat then, and then the Sixers took the win in the Sydney Smash. Pretty resounding win, given how the Thunder have been since the 15 all out. They've played really well, and the Sixers have given them a bit of a beating there. And then we moved on to another Stars game. The last game that we played at the MCG, as we're recording this, in fact, we were away, disregard that. Completely ignore that. We were away in Hobart and we got beat again. We batted first, so that's why I was confused. Batted first, made 131, which just isn't enough. Hilton Cartwright with a nice 57. Bo Webster chipping in. James Seymour batted really well, who really surprised me. I was looking up the squad this week. I didn't realise that he's so experienced, James Seymour. I thought he was like 22, 23. He's in his 30s. And he's finally getting a run at the Big Bash. So fair play to him. He batted really, really well. It was good to see him get a run. 20 off 7. Nice little cameo from him. But as we've said, across the season for the Stars, another defeat.
Yeah, like you said before, you know, you take the New Year's Eve win, because that's probably one of the biggest ones on the calendar. So yeah, like, you've got that in your pocket, I guess, and on your side. But then moving on to the next game was the Strikers and the Renegades. This was last night as we speak, which was another incredible game. Now, like I said earlier in the season, not being able to chase down 130, but setting 202. Now, this was always a bit uneasy for us, because we're thinking, you know, 200, good score. But we managed to chase down 230 the other day. So it's like, it's always, you know, even though you've scored 200, you can never be too sure. Coming up against the Renegades, obviously, you know, you're a little bit more confident that we could win. Only came down to 20 runs in the end, which is still, you know, quite close regarding the score that we got. Chris Lynn was the player of the match with 69 not out off his 37. Matt Short made 38 off 22. Ryan Gibson put together a little bit, you know, a little bit of a score, better than what he was the last game with 24. Adam Hose with 33 and Colin de Grandhomme with 32. So yeah, really good from the Strikers all over. I guess that everyone chipped in. Early wickets for the Strikers, which was good. Saw Marcus Harris go for 8, Guptill for 14. Sam Harper got 63, which was, you know, they were building a nice partnership him and Jono Wells, and it was a bit like, oh, you know, they could do this. We're kind of just laughing away the pain of the fact that the Renegades are scoring. But then wickets started to fall and we were feeling a lot more comfortable with that. You know, good bowling from Wes Agar with 2 for 26 off his four. Probably one of his best figures all season, aside from the Sydney game, the Sydney Thunder game. Ben Menenti with two as well. An expensive two. He went for 50 runs. A lot of sixes were hit, but yeah, a good debut for him. And Harry Conway, he was expensive. He was none for 42 off his four, but good to see, just good to see him back out there on the field. And then Matt Shaw, obviously, with two wickets as well. The exact same figures as Wes. They were both 2 for 26 or four. So not often you see that, but yeah, just a good game. Good game for the Strikers, and nice to get a win at home again after New Year's for sure.
Yeah, certainly was. Now, before we move on from the Big Bash, just want to talk about a game that's coming up. We've got the second House at Derby of the season. So we'll briefly have a look at this. This is happening tomorrow as we record this. We're both going to be there. You'll be in the stands, and you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if it's roles reversed. Obviously, I was there on New Year's Eve and, you know, we got the win. So maybe there's an away win for you coming up tomorrow night. We'll have to see. But what do we think? Is the second House at Derby going to go the same way as the first?
Who knows? I think off our form at the moment, hopefully not. Because like you're saying, scoring 200, it's not bad. But yeah, I don't know. Obviously, you winning on New Year's, it's given you the Stars a lot of confidence. So we'll see. But it is going to be a really interesting game. And yeah, looking forward to travelling over and watching it in person.
Let's see.
Hopefully. What do you think?
Well, look, obviously, at the moment, no Marcus Stoinis. He's out with injury. He was a main reason. I mean, he was one of a few reasons why we won the game on New Year's Eve. It wasn't just him, but he was brilliant that night. And he's obviously not going to be there because of injury. So that's going to, you know, not help us at all. But we're going to have to see. Obviously, both sides are capable of playing really well at their best. So we're going to have to see how this one goes. I'm going to sit on the fence here for this one. I know you want a response out of me. You want me to say, oh, the Stars are going to absolutely, you know, win by 10 wickets. But no, I'm going to sit on the fence, hoping for a really, really good game of cricket.
Well, I don't mind. I don't mind you not saying the Stars are going to win. I'm not complaining. But yeah, like we said, it'll be an interesting one. And obviously that will be talked about next week. But yeah, moving on to WNCL. Now we'll quickly run through these from where we left off. Tasmania got a couple of wins over Queensland, which was, you know, a tight competition you'd think going into it, but Tasmania won quite comfortably against Queensland. And then the game that kind of shocked everyone was Western Australia and South Australia. It went to a super over, which was really interesting. Both got 231. Now in the super over, you obviously can't lose more than two wickets, otherwise your innings automatically, like your over automatically ends. Amy Edgar went for two. Chloe Paparo went for a duck. It was given to Amanda Wellington to bowl. They only made three in the super over, which, you know, isn't too great. And then South Australia did it, you know, with ease. Bridget Patterson making two and Courtney Webb making one. So, you know, a pretty anticlimactic super over, I guess. But some good wickets from Wellow there. She was the player of the match due to that. And then they also won the second game against West Australia. Not as close, but still quite close, only by six runs. But yeah, some standout performances by the girls in red. There was Bridget Patterson with 152, Josie Dooley with 93 not out. It's good batting by Maddie Dark as well to mention. In the second game, she made 133, which is always really great to see. So yeah, good to see Maddie Dark really stand up with the bat there after we heard her talk about how much she wants to you know, play well for Western Australia.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've also had a couple of Victoria and New South Wales games that have both gone our way, which is very, very nice. Always nice when there's a bit of a rivalry, an unstated rivalry, isn't there, between Victoria and New South Wales. And Victoria have got the wood on both occasions this year. 88-run win for the first game and two centuries for Victoria, one for Elise Perry, which was awesome to see, and one for How's That alumni, Nicole Fulton, 107 not out, which was absolutely class. Like, we were both absolutely buzzing for Nicole, obviously having her on the podcast. And I think the episode came out, you know, the night of this game, which was very, very timely. So well done to Nicole for not only hitting the century, but hitting it on that day. So it worked really well for us. But two wickets went to Lauren Smith. There was a couple of runouts as well for New South Wales, and they got nowhere near in the end. It was a good total from Victoria. New South Wales, 233 for 8. Sammy Joe Johnson with a nice 48, but nowhere near enough to see New South Wales over the line. And you have a look at the next game that was just a couple of days after Victoria winning that one as well. New South Wales batting first, setting a decent total of 283 for 7, slightly under, you'd think, but still not enough to lose by, you know, 11 overs as it was. Just over 11 overs, it ended up being 7 wickets with 67 balls left. Victoria chased that down in. Phoebe Litchfield, an awesome player, 82 off 99 for her. Sammy Joe Johnson, 41 not out, continued a good little spell for her. Sophie Day taking 3 wickets. Georgia Wareham, who's recently come back into the Victorian side with 2 wickets. Annabelle Sutherland taking 2 as well. Annalise Perry in the response. Twin centuries, pretty much. I know it's not a test match, so you can't... I suppose, can you call it a twin century? I'm not too sure. I suppose we can do it. We're going to, just for the sake of it. 130 not out of 95. Not only an immense score, but an immense strike rate as well. Meg Lanning, great to see her back as well. She made 61 off 52, so better than her a ball. Sophie Reed with a nice 44 as well. So Victoria winning a couple of games against New South Wales, which we'll take as a definite result for us.
Yeah, it's just good to see the return of Meg Lanning as well, back to cricket, and Georgia Wareham as well. She's been out for a long time due to injury, so to see her return has been really good to see. And I think Nicole's probably a bit like, it's probably all a bit weird for her having to captain Meg Lanning. Like, it's not often you see Meg Lanning not being a captain of a team. So yeah, that's definitely an interesting one. But yeah, good games there all round for both of our teams, really. I'm sure both of us are quite happy with the WNCL. So to go over the standings, Tasmania in first, Queensland are in second, South Australia third, Victoria fourth, Western Australia fifth, New South Wales sixth, and ACT seventh. Talking about ACT, should we move on to this week's guest?
We shall.
So this week we spoke to Olivia Porter, as you would have heard at the beginning. Olivia was so brilliant, wasn't she? She's so well spoken. She obviously talks very highly about her teammates, her cricket that she's played. So I really enjoyed chatting to Olivia. What did you kind of make of that interview?
Yeah, much the same. I think, again, like you said, very well spoken, obviously quite a youngster in terms of a cricket career, but she's spoken about having to sort of be a leader within that ACT dressing room, which was quite refreshing to see. She spoke a lot about the likes of Alex Blackwell, Rachel Haynes as role models of hers as she's come through with the Thunder. So I think it was a really nice interview. And, you know, she sort of said off air, you know, she sort of said, well, she's a young player, she's making her way in the game. And, you know, it was great to see that, you know, her mindset and a bit of an insight into how she's done that. And hopefully she can keep going and reach the heights of Australia like she wants to.
Well, it's in the air and it's taken. What a catch. The Thunder are up and about. Olivia Porter with a simple one to begin with, but it's just pulled out one of the catches of the competition.
Welcome and thank you very much for joining us today.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
So do you mind just starting off by telling us kind of where in the world you are at the moment and, you know, what teams you're associated with at this point in time?
Yeah, so I'm currently commuting between Canberra and Sydney, which is super fun. I didn't think I'd ever be living in Canberra when I first came here. I think I was in year 6 in high school, and I didn't think I'd ever be living in Canberra because it's so quiet to compare to Sydney. But yeah, I'm currently living in both. I just finished up a Big Bash in Sydney, which was actually based there, and that was the first time in a couple of years with COVID. It's been really hard and we've been on tour. So it was nice to, I guess, live at home with mum and dad during that. But now I'm currently back in Canberra preparing for the rest of WNCL till March, which is really cool.
Yeah. So tell us a bit about WNCL, you know, how you've gone this season. You know, maybe ACT, they wouldn't have gone results wise how you probably would have liked, but how's it been within the squad and how have you found WNCL personally this season?
Yeah, it's obviously we have a young group, but I think that's like a really cool thing because you can see the development over the next couple of years, which I think it's always hard because you want to be winning as many games as you can and that kind of thing. But I think for us, it's a long-term perspective. So even though, yeah, we've had some tough losses this season, I think like they're all going to be put in the memory bank for us in the next couple of years, which will be really exciting. But I think with WNCL extending its competition to 12 games, like that's so cool to be a part of. I think only having like 6 to 8 games at the start when I first joined it a couple of years ago, it was such a short competition, even though we train nearly all year for it. So it was really weird to kind of grasp your thoughts around it. So yeah, it hasn't been the best start to our season with 6 losses, but I know that we've got such a young group and we're really resilient. Like, we bounce back quite quickly. Obviously it hurts during the moment, but our coaching and support staff have been really good for us to bounce back. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, we'll talk a bit more about WNCL and Big Bash. We'll dive into that a bit deeper in a moment. But to go right back to the very beginning, now, how did you first get into cricket?
I was 9 years old when I started playing, and I kind of filled in for my brother's team. So I grew up playing cricket with my brother, which was really cool. He hated it because he was so competitive, and he hated the fact that I guess some days I played better than him and some days he played better than me. But yeah, I joined the local like boys team because there was no women's comp for us at 9, 10 years old. So that was really cool. And yeah, just it was me and another girl, and we kind of just got into it. And, you know, I played a lot of sports back in the day, soccer, touch footy and netball. So cricket was definitely a weird one to go back to high school and be like, hey, girls, like I've joined cricket. And they're like, isn't that a boys sport? And I'll be like, yeah, but like it's super fun. But yeah, and then we kind of just like fell into women's grade cricket. And then next minute I found myself playing it alongside, like, you know, Alex Blackwell and Rachel Haynes at club cricket, and made my way through the New South Wales pathway. And that was a crazy experience every Tuesday and Thursday night after high school, just driving to Blacktown and training for, you know, hours at a time. And yeah, and getting pulled into, you know, Cricket Australia camps in Brisbane at a young age. Like, it was such a surreal experience, and you kind of didn't know where the path was going to take you at that time. But I think the beauty of it was I was just like so excited for the ride ahead and just to see where it took me. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's taking you places now, which is really good to see. But you talked about there being a little bit of a stigma with women's cricket at a certain point in time a few years ago. Now, obviously, women's cricket is rising at a rapid rate, and it's, you know, we've had World Cups and 80,000 people at the MCG. How nice it is to sort of be a part of, you know, a real, you know, massive rise in women's cricket. And, you know, how good is that to sort of, you know, be a part of that all?
Yeah, it's a crazy experience. Like, I remember we always used to have like lectures from the old, like, past players, and they kind of like set the tone of how cricket's kind of like made its way to us. And to think that the growth has changed that much for us playing now, it feels like it's growing at a rapid rate. We're starting to see like competitions like the IPL for women's and the 100, like just small competitions starting to grow, and you start to see more domestic players from like all over the country start joining your comp, and you make friends with people from, you know, different countries. It's like a crazy experience to be a part of. And you don't know how much it's growing until, I guess, you have time to reflect of where you were even this time last year. So it's obviously growing a lot, and that's the really exciting thing to be a part of. And, you know, we can only really thank the past players that have set the tone for us to be able to take it somewhere. And I think we're always really appreciative of, like, the past players, and we always make note of that. And I think that's really an inspiring thing to do, and that's how you kind of, like, pasture your wisdom and your knowledge onto the next generation, which is really cool.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you talked about the growth of women's cricket. Was that a reason that you decided to choose playing cricket over some of the other sports you were playing growing up, to say, well, right, I can be a part of something quite special here?
Yeah, I think being a part of the New South Wales setup, it's such a dominating state in Australia, and they kind of put it in your mind that, you know, you can really make a difference in this sport. And I guess to see the growth of where it was at that young age, it kind of like, it just drew you in. Like, I knew I was sitting there, and I used to, have Leah Poulton come up and say, you know, you can play for Australia, you can do this in a few years' time. Like, it was just, you just were drawn to it naturally. And I think that's where the determination, and I was always a competitive kid at a young age. So I think once you got told all these things and you were shown the way to the path, like, I think I was just like, yeah, like, I'm in regardless. Like, obviously I didn't realize how hard it would be until you're in the situation, but I think like when you sign up for it at a young age, which I kind of did at 14 15 16, with a lot of girls like Hannah Darlington and Maddie Dark, and we all sat in the same room and had the same lectures, and we kind of just like put our hand up and was like, yeah, let's do it. So yeah.
And you mentioned New South Wales there as well as being a massive state in women's cricket, especially. Now, obviously, you started in New South Wales and you've gone through the pathway there. Could you describe your pathway into playing professional cricket?
Yeah, so, well, basically New South Wales kind of opened up the different types of pathways. So being exposed to different states at nationals at a young age through under 15s to under 18s, you were kind of exposed to different environments, which was really cool. And then from there, when I left high school, I was fortunate enough to get a phone call from Olivia Thornton here at ACT and asking me to move out of home and join the professional setup here for WNCL, which I remember I was making 2 minute noodles in the kitchen and I told mom I'm moving to Canberra and she was like, don't be silly, you're not going to Canberra. Like, but yeah, I just kind of like, it all happened within a month. I kind of just packed my bag. I had no idea how to cook, clean or do anything, but all I knew is I just wanted to play cricket every day. And the thought of like getting paid to do that, you know, it was crazy at the time. I always forget that you get paid to play cricket at the same time, but because I just don't see it as a job. Like, it's just such a cool experience and it just, yeah, it just makes me really happy. But yeah, I just came to Canberra and wanted to be a part of it. And I've been here for 3 years now. So I kind of am viewed as a senior player, which is so weird because I'm only 21. But yeah, like, as I said, it kind of just drew me here. And now going back to playing for Sydney Thunder, like, that's also another, a great experience. And that's something I've grown up always wanting to do. So yeah.
Yeah, you spoke about being a senior player at 21. That just shows how, you know, how young and how much potential that ACT group have got. Do you feel like you're becoming a leader now in that team? Obviously, it is quite a young side, and as we've talked about, the results haven't quite gone their way. But is it nice sort of being viewed as a senior player? Do you feel that extra sort of responsibility in a sense?
Yeah, I mean, I've always grown up being a captain of my team back in the first grade for Sydney Women's Comp. I got passed down the captaincy through Alex Blackwell at university. So that was a really cool experience. And I kind of took it on and learned from them. So I think those natural values and characteristics have kind of drawn me in here. And for some reason, the girls seem to think that I have a bit of knowledge about the game here in ACT, which I do. I love watching the game, no matter what I'm watching, if it's Bangladesh versus Pakistan, like, I'm watching it. So I'm always wanting to learn. So I think like that is kind of like what is making me feel like I'm a leader and somewhere that people go to for advice and even about the smallest things as well. So yeah. And I think going away and playing in Big Bash and bringing that knowledge and experience back really helps like set a foundation here in ACT. So yeah, obviously, you know, we've got Katie Mack, she's quite a young captain, and we've got someone like Holly Furling who brings a world of knowledge like around the country. It's insane. And I think that's really cool. So kind of just like going with the flow and seeing where the leadership takes me.
Yeah. And well, you mentioned there about, you know, learning certain things from Big Bash and transferring them over and everything like that. So I know you've mentioned already a couple of times, you've spoken about Alex Blackwell. So she must have been quite a role model for you, I guess, would you say?
Yeah, she was probably like in the female setup, like definitely the player that I kind of was just drawn to. I think the way that she went about her cricket was really crafty and it was different. Like, she wasn't the biggest power hitter. She wasn't like the one that everyone was drawn to at the time, but she kind of just got the job done. And she was always the player that was unnoticed. And for me, that's kind of like how I like to go about my game. I like to just get the job done at the end of the day and kind of not be the one that's like, you know, the center of attention or the one that's, you know, taking that kind of thing. So for her, she was just like the way that she went about it, I just like enjoyed watching it. And to grow up like alongside her at club level, and which was a really cool experience. So I guess that kind of like made it easier. And then, you know, we started to talk and she's someone that I definitely go to during tough situations, and which is a really cool thing to have, knowing that you've kind of got Alex Blackwell in your back corner, which is really cool.
Yeah, definitely. And then to transfer that, like we said, to Big Bash, now you were a Thunder fan before you signed with them or before you were playing for them. So to go from, you know, watching the games to playing for the Thunder, what was that whole experience like for you, you know, making your debut this year, but being in the squad for some time? How has that experience been for you so far?
Yeah, it's been a long journey, actually. We had a Thunder Academy back in the day that I was a part of as a 14-year-old. I was just a net bowler. He used to rock up and just bowl all day to the girls when they were done. And it was boiling hot those days. And I just remember just being around those players and just looking at the way they go about it. And I was like, this is amazing. Like, so I've been a part of the Thunder journey pretty much since Thunder was, I guess, created. So to kind of see where the path took me was really cool. But yeah, obviously I'd been with them contracting like for 3 years. And to make my debut this year, it's been a long waiting kind of journey. I got injured the first year that I got contracted, which took me out. And that was pretty hard to take as a young 18-year-old who just wanted to kind of grab every opportunity with two hands and think that like nothing would come in the way. You would just have this amazing path forward. So that was definitely a bit of a setback. But from that moment, did I think I was going to be debuting 2 years later in front of my Sydney fan, like, you know, my family, my friends in Sydney? No. And that's what the beauty of it. Like, that's how surreal that day was. I don't even remember what the score was half the time. Like, it was just so surreal. And a lot happened that day. I think we got attacked by the Plovers and we made like world news, which was hilarious, which was super fun. And then, yeah, it was against Hobart. And I remember it was a night game. So I had to wait all day to play, and I was hoping my body would wake up at midday, and no, I was up at like 6 a.m. just thinking about how the day was going to go. So yeah, look, it was a long anticipated wait, but like looking back now, it was definitely worth it. Yeah.
Yeah. And you obviously talk about, you know, just having to kind of wait in the wings for quite some time. Now for you, was that maybe like a bit frustrating, knowing that, you know, you're there and you're ready and you're keen and you just weren't quite getting that opportunity up until, you know, a couple of years later? Or were you, you know, completely fine with just sticking around and you knew that when your time was going to come, you were prepared for it?
Yeah, look, it was, it was extremely hard knowing that you don't really get taught how to deal with that kind of stuff at a young age. So when you sign up for professional cricket, you don't know like the ins and outs of it and how hard selection is, because some days you could be performing but the wicket's just not suited to your type of game. So it took a while for me to understand, I guess, like why I wasn't selected. And you know, so there were some days where purely there were just no reasons why. So I was very frustrated, and the girls I think knew, because I was just sitting and waiting patiently. But I didn't want that to bother the way that I wanted to go about my career. I knew that, you know, the career is such like a marathon. It's not like a short race. So I knew that if I just stuck here and I kept training and putting in the work, that like one day Trevor will tap me on the back and say like, now's the time. And I think when he did that, I think I said to him, like, are you sure? Like, is this the day? And because there was a few moments where he would be like, you know, if this happened, you'd be playing or whatever. So it was really hard to deal with that side, that uncertainty. And still to this day, like, you know, that your spot's never purely like, you know, guaranteed. You're always uncertain with so many different factors now. And I think with the power surge, like, you know, that's a new introduction to women's cricket, where you're starting to see roles just suited to certain spots now in cricket. So it makes it even harder to know if you get guaranteed a spot or not. So and there are things you can't really get taught as a young age. Like, you have to actually experience them firsthand to be able to get through that. So yeah, for sure, it was definitely frustrating. But I think, like, if you ask me that now, it was definitely worth the wait. But if I was talking to you 12 months ago, I would have been like, oh, this is so frustrating. Like, I feel like I'm ready to go. But yeah, I just had to wait.
And throughout that waiting period, you know, how did you kind of keep a positive mindset in this? Because at times you're probably like, you know, well, especially when you're injured, you're like, you know, what am I doing? Like, why am I not playing? All this kind of stuff. So how do you... Yeah. Keep a positive mindset throughout, going, right, you know, my time will come and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely a lot of negative thoughts and emotions that came with it. You definitely questioned whether this was worth it or not, for sure. But I think you always go back to memories and moments in your career when you first started playing cricket. And I think I'm a big believer, like, I have a lot of love for the sport, and I've just grown up naturally watching it and like just being drawn to it. So I knew the love would never go away from the hard moments of like not getting selected and understanding why that was the case. But it was more the idea of like, okay, like, this isn't my moment right now, but I know that they're going to give me a chance and I'm just going to make sure that I grab it with two hands. And you kind of just like go off people who have similar experiences. I know there's girls in Thunder who really helped me through that journey, who had a similar experience where, you know, they were in and out of the team, and their thoughts and wisdom really helped me get through that. And of course I had my family as well with me, and yeah, they were frustrated as much as I was, but they, you know, to have them there and be in Sydney at the time is definitely what I needed during that time. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I know you spoke a lot about Alex Blackwell before being a role model, but we talked a little bit about how you've grown up as a Thunder fan, and how, you know, you supported the club before you got to play for them. Did you have a favourite player growing up?
Yeah, it was actually David Warner. When I watched him play cricket, I was like, oh my God, I want to be exactly like David Warner. I remember him watching him at the test match at the SCG score the fastest 100 in a first session. And I just thought, oh my God, like, he's just insane, this guy. So I just knew straight away, like, I want to be like that. I want to be aggressive. I want to take the game on, and I want to be an entertainer with cricket. So he was definitely the reason why I got into cricket. And then when I slowly to find out, like, there was a women's path, there was a women's cricket team, I think I was 14 when I found out that there was Australian women's cricket team. And then I was, went and watched a few games, and that's how I started to understand the game a bit more. And then I was like, wow, Alex Blackwell really goes about her game in a crafty way. But now David Warner for sure was my favourite. Yeah.
He's been pretty good at the top of the order for Australia, and me being an England fan, it's been quite frustrating for a few years, but it is what it is. Now, if we go on to Alex Blackwell, she's, you know, been quite a common part of the start of this interview, but there's a picture circulating of you and Alex Blackwell when you were a fan and she was a player, and then this season it was swapped around where you were in the playing kit and she was, you know, watching on. It must be a surreal moment knowing that one of your idols was, you know, is now in your position and you're in her position. What's that sort of like, knowing that there's a thing there where, you know, you've grown up watching somebody and now she's there watching you?
Yeah, oh my God, that's such a hideous photo. I was wearing this tie-dyed shirt back in the day. I thought it was cool, but it definitely is not looking back at it. But no, look, I remember that photo, taking that photo with Alex Blackwell. It was actually at our local Sydney Grade Oval, so that made it even more special, just being a part and watching her play that day. But yeah, I think it was our media manager was like, I'd love to take a photo of you and like her signing your hat. And I was like, oh, don't be silly. Like, it's, you know, that's crazy. But I think looking back at it now, like, to think that that happened within 5 years, it is like something that I'm still not 100% like, wow, that happened. So it was such a surreal experience. And to have her commentating that game as well when I was debuting was really cool. It was a moment that I know that I'll always hold on to for the rest of my cricket career, which is really exciting.
Yeah, you spoke about the frustrating times playing cricket, of all the injuries, of not being picked, whatever. Are these kind of moments vindication of why you keep playing, these moments with people like Alex Blackwell and, you know, who supported you so much? Are these the reasons, you know, why you keep playing and why you keep plugging at it to try and get better?
Yeah, they're the ones I think you keep in the memory bank, and you look back and reflect on it during those times that you question why you're playing it. And then it puts things in perspective of how far you've come. And I think, you know, we tend to kind of rush into our career at such a young age, especially the way that women's cricket is developing. You start to see people like Phoebe Litchfield at such a young age representing our country in India. And you think, wow, like, you know, why? Like, that's insane. But I think it's like moments where you can put things in perspective and kind of like grasp your understanding of like how your journey will be is really important. And they're definitely moments where you reflect back and it just makes you feel like you've come a long way. And that's a really good feeling that you can take into the rest of your matches, especially when your team's not going well, or you might be in a form slump, or you might be questioning things. It's a really good thing to have where you can put things in perspective and really just be happy with where you are at the moment. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. If we just shift it ever so slightly, we've talked a lot about Alex Blackwell, who is definitely a Sydney Thunder icon. Another one who would definitely fall under that bracket is Rachel Haynes, who retired at the end of the recent WBBL season. She's been an absolute stalwart of the team ever since, you know, Thunder started playing in the WBBL. What have you perhaps learned from her maybe that you've been able to implement and put into your own game?
I was so starstruck when I found out that Rachel Haynes was going to be my captain for Big Bash, especially when I was debuting and she handed me the ball, I think at the 10th over, and she says, you got to bowl against Lizelle Lee. And I'm like, whoa, this is crazy. Like, what is happening? But yeah, Rach is a really, really tough captain, and she creates such an environment where you want to win games for your captain. And I think in order to, like, you know, have an environment like that is really powerful. And I know that she probably, you know, as a team, we didn't have the best year, and we didn't have like the way that we wanted to have it, where she kind of got up at the beginning of the season, was like, I want us to make finals. Like, I want to go all the way. And I think that's what we were striving for. But I think, like, we wouldn't have changed anything. She always made us believe that we could win and win convincingly. And like, they're the moments and like the characteristics that kind of rub off on you. And you just wanted to put your hand up and put yourself in those tough situations. Like, you know, if we were getting hit around the park, like, you wanted to be the one to get the breakthrough for your captain. And I think she created that environment, and her presence was very intense out there in a really good way, which is really cool. And, you know, she's just an icon of cricket, and she has such, like, she's like Mrs. Reliable. Like, she's just out there, you know, she's going to take those winning catches. You know, she's going to score the big runs for your team. And it was an absolute, like, honour to be a part of, like, her retirement year, and especially to run out there at North Sydney, you know, with, like, everyone else in her last game. It was such an emotional moment for her. And I think all we wanted to do was just win the game for her, and unfortunately that wasn't the case. Strike has played really well, but I know she came off the field, like, excited and happy and ready to start her next journey, which will be really exciting to see where that kind of takes her.
Yeah, we're just going to move on to that last game, and obviously it was against Adelaide, so Lily didn't get the memo, because she was celebrating all the Strikers wickets, and I'm like, you know, I can understand it, but obviously it was a good moment for Lily and for the Strikers, because that obviously started their run to winning the whole thing. But yeah, you know, it was so good. The good thing from my point of view as a neutral for that game was just watching how well Rachel, obviously when she was being escorted off the field by everybody and getting applauded by everybody, it was just wonderful to see. And that's what I sort of took away from that. But, you know, you talked a little bit about that game against the Strikers, but could you give us a little bit of an insight into her last season as a Thunder player, what it was like in the dressing room? Maybe was there an extra sort of added drive to sort of go that extra mile for her, knowing that it would be her last season in the Thunder green?
Yeah, it was a bit of mixed emotions. I think a few of the girls had grown up playing with her since, you know, WBBL 01. So for those types of players, it was a really emotional time, because they were kind of counting down the last ever game that she'd be playing with them. And I think for us, like, as young players who kind of, like, you know, that might have been their first year interaction with her, that was kind of like, it was kind of like the opposite to us. It was like, oh my God, like, I want to do like the best I can to make sure that, you know, I'm putting in the hard work for her and getting our team across the line. But I think for, like, Thunder Nation as a whole, with the fans as well, we just really wanted to take it all the way. I mean, the idea was to win the championship, and she'd get the best, you know, feeling of, you know, winning a tournament and also retiring. But, you know, it kind of was the opposite effect for us. But the memories and the way that, like, we went about it, especially there were games and, you know, I think it was the Brisbane game in Adelaide, Allan Border, and it was such a controversial game with the rain that was affecting it. And she kind of mentioned, God, I've never been in a game like that before. So there were new moments and memories that she created, and experiences that, you know, she's traveled around the world, but to still have, you know, moments like that was really good for her. And I think the way that we finished off the comp, those close kind of games, and her last Sydney smash at North Sydney, that was a really special moment. And it was really emotional, like, seeing the New South Wales players, even in Sydney Sixes, kind of, I guess, like, recognise that this is a really special moment for women's cricket. And I think Alyssa Healy shed some tears, which was really hard. And you kind of felt, as a young player, like, this is what it's all about. Like, it's about creating memories and moments, and when the time's right, you know, when to hang the boots up. So, yeah.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, you talked about all the memories that Rachel's, you know, made playing with the Thunder. What legacy do you think she's left within that team? And how will that, you know, sort of help your group moving forward?
She's definitely left a lot of, like, determination and fight within our group to want to strive to do better. I think we have a lot of I guess, like rebuilding and a kind of like of our characteristics and our values. And I think she kind of left us saying like, you know, this is a great setup. You've got a great team. We've got a great support staff and system in place. And we've got great facilities with the new Cricket New South Wales at Wilson Park. It's an absolutely amazing place to train. So it's all there. And I guess she kind of just said, like, now it's up to you guys to see where you want to take it. And yeah, like to have an icon like that who has basically founded Sydney Thunder for women's cricket. We just want to keep, like, you know, taking that into the next couple of years and having that aggressive style of play that she brings as well, which is really what we want to do.
Yeah, and moving forward, like next season, you're not going to have her and there's going to be changes in coaches as well. So I guess you mentioned there, obviously, like, you know, what you kind of want to take from her. But is there anything that you kind of thinking, right, you know, is it sort of like a fresh start in a way for the Thunder? And is that something that you've even thought about yet? Because it's only just finished, but already there's been so many changes. So are you kind of like, right, like, you know, what's next for the Thunder? Because it's going to be quite different without Rachel and with new coaches as well. Like, so what's that kind of thought process going to be like for you and the team maybe?
Yeah, obviously there's definitely been some changes that's happened like straight after Big Bash is finished. But I think they're all like new, like challenges. And I think they're challenged, like things that happen, like no matter what team you're in, even if you're in a winning side team and it happens everywhere. So I think, you know, that there's always going to be changes that happens. But I think like the way that women's cricket's heading, especially in T20 with new changes to WBBL, it's definitely a fresh start that we kind of want to go in and make our name for WBBL. So I think with new faces, different, you know, people in the environment, that's something that's really exciting. And I think we kind of all sat in a boardroom at the last day of training and kind of looked around the room and we just got really excited because we know that we can like make a new name for ourselves in a sense that we really want to be a dominating team. And that gives you like inspiration and courage to go out there and actually like try and win games and, you know, win with a fight. So I think that's something that like we're really excited to bring next season. And yeah, I mean, given new challenges and new coaches and that kind of thing, you know, we saw with the Sydney Sixers, Charlotte Edwards did an amazing job with the way that she kind of had that team environment. And I know that Angie, my teammate Angie Denford, she was really excited to have a Pom taking over that kind of Aussie role, which was really cool. So we'll see what happens, but I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, we spoke to Angie actually, and she was talking about the Posse vibes in the Sixers team with Charlotte Edwards and Angie Schultz and all that. It was brilliant to hear that inside of things. But talking about obviously the Sydney Sixers, you've got the Sydney Smash over there in New South Wales, and obviously you'd have seen so many of those games as a fan, and now you're involved, you know, playing in the squad. What is it like, you know, sort of, you know, being a player in those sort of games? Is it any different to any other games that you play, or is it just, you just see it as another game against another opponent?
It feels like a grand final, like every time we verse Sydney Sixers, which is such a cool feeling. But yeah, I used to sit on the hill at North Sydney every Sydney Smash since it's come, and I was sitting with my mates and my family, and I used to just like watch the best go about it. And it was just like this massive rival, which is so cool. And I just knew I wanted to be a part of it. And then I started to see like some of my closest friends be a part of it. And that just made me want to be even more involved. So I think when I ran out there and I got the, you know, the tap on the shoulder that I was going to be a part of the Sydney Smash, it felt like a grand final to me. And to have like, you know, Alyssa Healy batting and Susie Bates and then Ash Gardner walking in next, I was like, oh my God, like you're in it, like here it is. So it kind of was good because I didn't really think about it a lot. I just let the feelings and emotions take over. And I felt my parents' nerves, like, you know, from the grandstand, they were like freaking out because they've only ever watched the Sydney Smash as well. So that was such a cool experience. And they're like games that you hold on to and you just wait. You like look at the calendar and you're like, yep, there's the Sydney Smash. Like that's the time where we really want to like make our mark in this competition. And it's such a good rival and we absolutely love it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a massive game for the Big Bash, the Women's Big Bash. It's a massive, massive game. They're always great to watch. But the Sydney Sixers WBBL team is genuinely stacked. You look at, you know, everywhere you look, Perry, Healy, Gardner, Eccleston this year. Was there a sort of added nerves not only being a part of the Sydney Smash, but knowing that you've got those players and more? You know, if you could spend hours talking about that team and how good they are, there's players I didn't even name there in that list who are incredible. But was there an added bit of pressure knowing that, you know, you were coming up against such a star-studded team with star-studded players?
Yeah, you definitely tried to play it cool when you were going through the scouting, and you're kind of like, oh my God, how am I going to get these players out in a sense? But like, I was absolutely terrified out there. But I think like that's what makes it even cooler. Like, you want to be a part of those challenges, and you're only going to get better if you're bowling those overs to the best batters in the world. And that's something that I'm like so competitive about. Like, I want to actually like be involved and put my head down and do the work. So I think the craziest moment was when I went out there and I had to face Sophie Eccleston, and like, she stands behind the umpire. So I like, obviously we spoke about it, but I think when she was doing it and then she poked her head out and she bowled it and I missed it and it hit the stumps, and I thought, okay, well, welcome to like international cricket. Here it is. So that was a really cool experience, but I guess like they're learning experiences that you take, you know, to anywhere. And now that I know, like, you played against like some of the best players in the world, like, you can feed that in where you are now. And here I am at ACT, and I'm bringing that knowledge and that kind of like courage back here in this setup. So yeah, it was definitely a crazy experience, that's for sure.
Yeah. And I guess talking about that and then, you know, transferring over to WNCL cricket. Now, you obviously not being a part of New South Wales anymore, but to go back to just being, you know, teammates with some of those players and well, you would have been back in New South Wales, is that like an odd feeling, just kind of being like, right, Big Bash is done, Sydney Smash is done, you know, you're just going back to being in WNCL teams? What's that like to kind of just revert back to that?
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting transition, and I think ACT is really unique because we don't have a WBBL team, so a lot of us do separate. And I think that's the cool thing, is there's a lot of like rivalry between that. So like every time you look at the calendar, you're like, oh, I'm versing Katie Mack or I'm versing Holly Thurling. So they're cool aspects where you get to like come up against your teammates. But even like coming out of ACT and going into New South Wales, like, you get a bit of stick from the girls from WNCL, you know, if they beat you and that kind of thing. So there's always the levels and banter going on, and I think that's what keeps cricket really exciting and fresh. And yeah, I think then the flip side of that is coming out of Big Bash and going into WNCL. It's always hard coming back to our state because we always have that separation from a lot of players who are in Canberra base, and then obviously some who are traveling around Australia. So we always make sure when we come back that we stay connected and we do things over that period of time where we get to share each other's experiences. And I think the girls had a really good training block where they could put themselves under a lot of pressure and to come back and see those results from those girls. And I think them supporting us in WBBL, that's how we stay connected and keep that kind of like cohesion in the team in a really good state leading into WNCL, because you don't have much of a turnover. I think we had 2 weeks off and we're straight into WNCL. So yeah, you've got to make sure you keep those relationships going when you guys are separated. Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You've mentioned earlier that you got quite a young team for ACT still. A lot of teams lose players to go away for Australia duties, like quite a few Victorians and New South Wales girls. So for you, like saying, being a young team, not losing any girls going away for Australia duties, are there any certain talks around that with the group? Like, right, you know, we've got our whole team still. We've still stuck together. We don't have to bring in new people or anything like that. So yeah, what's that like for you and the team to know that other teams are going to be losing some of their core players, but you aren't?
Yeah, I think we're really blessed with that we have quite a small squad. I think you look around different states and they have squads up to 18 or 20 players. And I think like we're really, yeah, fortunate to have quite a small tight family in a sense. So I think we always have each other's backs when it comes down to, you know, selection and that kind of thing. But I think it's an opportunity where we know that it's kind of like our coach always puts it in our head, like, this is a marathon. Like, we've got to, like, we might not be getting the results now, but what we're building, and we're having young players in very crucial roles within the games. And you look around there, you've got the experience of Tassie at the moment with like Elise Villani going in at those types of crucial roles. And for us, you know, we've got young developing players. I think that's like, we know that this season's all about just like going in those experiences and going under pressure and just seeing what happens and then building on that and like the next year, like year or two to come. So obviously it's really hard as a young group because all we want to do is win and we want to go out there and play our best and we want to score 50s and take, you know, fifers and that kind of thing. But at the moment it's just not clicking for us. But we know that all we can do is keep rocking up, training really hard, putting in the work, putting in the scouting, and then seeing where the game takes us. And we know that that will lead us in good stead and create a foundation where we can build on.
Yeah, well, that's it, isn't it? It's like you're at the point now where you're kind of just creating like that surface level, you know, you're creating a starting point. And like you said, in the years to come, that's when you start to win and you build on that, because you're going to, yeah, you're starting to kind of like create a culture where it's like, right, we need to just get Cricket ACT on the map, really. So for you to kind of be in that, obviously it's been around for a bit, so you're not like the inaugural group, but in a sense you kind of are, you know, you are like the founding kind of group. So for you, what's that like to be a part of something new in a way?
Yeah, it's really exciting because it's kind of like you're creating an environment where people are going to come in and join that, which is a really cool thing to be a part of. And it's kind of like your own. Like, we know as players, like, we're really, we want to be a player-led type of group. So we've got our coaches, but we want to control the environment and kind of like control our values and the way we want to play our cricket. And we're really fortunate enough here at Cricket ACT where we have that really good relationship between the support staff and coaches and players. So it's really cool to think that, like, you know, Katie being a very young captain, like, you know, for her, this is just a learning experience as it is for us going in, you know, at a young age. But I think like with all that knowledge and kind of platform and everyone's ideas, we can kind of sit down and kind of create like, okay, how do we make this team a winning team and a championship team in the future, which is a really excited thing, because then you get to that stage and you look back at this season and you think, yeah, we're lost six straight there. But those hard conversations and the times where we had to show up training and train even harder is worth it in the long run. And I think that's what we're all striving for and what the young girls are really excited for, including myself.
Yeah, no, look, it's super exciting. And I think a lot of people are kind of really looking forward to seeing where it can go in the near future. But after its pause and it resumes after Big Bash, yeah, when you got back into it, and for the rest of the season, what would you say maybe are your personal goals for the rest of the WNCL?
Yeah, I think on a personal level, I'd really like to start converting some of the starts that I've made this season. I really want to kind of be that top order batter in our group that is winning matches for your team and is making the hard runs. So I think obviously the biggest goal for me is making those 50s and 100s. That would be an amazing achievement. So that's probably on a batting note. And I think with my leg spin, I'm quite new to leg spin. I only just started picking it up this year. And I think when Katie throws me the ball at moments where we're one for 50 and I'm like, oh my God, like, you know, they've got 150 partnerships. So yeah, they're all learning experiences. So I think with leg spin, it's kind of just seeing where it takes me. And that's a really exciting opportunity as well. And I think on a team perspective, I think obviously we really want to get a win. And I think once we get a win and you get that momentum, and I think in T20 cricket, that's a perfect example. When you get a win, you grab that momentum and you take it forward to the next couple of games. So we know that we're so close to putting the pieces together to make our puzzle. And that's really exciting. And we'll just keep showing up and turning up and doing the best we can. And we just pray to the cricket gods that we get some luck along the way. And I think that's all you can kind of go for. Yeah.
If we move on slightly now, have you got a favourite memory in all of your years playing cricket, whether that be professionally or before that?
Yeah, I reckon my favourite memory would be back in under 15s. My first year representing New South Wales in the pathway system. We won our grand final. We had such an amazing group of girls. We had so much fun like leading into that championships. And that championships was actually in Sydney. So it was even more surreal, like, and amazing to win in front of like families and friends and that kind of thing. So, you know, to play alongside girls that I've grown up, you know, since I was 11 years old, and to win that title. And that was kind of like my first major title that I've ever won. And yeah, I think I took 5 for 15 that day, still my best figures to this day. So yeah, it was a really cool experience, and that will always be with me forever.
Pfeiffer in a championship. Not bad. Not bad at all. Now, this might be a tough one, this one, and we can respect if you don't want to answer it. Have you got a favourite teammate that you've played with across your career so far?
Oh, yeah, I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings that
much. You can name multiple. You can name multiple if you want to find a way out of it.
Well, I reckon looking back at that time in that under-15s kind of championship, like that setup, those types of girls like Maddie Dark and one of my good mates, Izzy Afras, like I loved playing with those types of people because we grew up playing in the same club team and then in New South Wales together and then winning championships together. So we kind of like, we just loved like being around each other. So, and Izzy was the type of spinner that thought every LB was out. So it was always so much fun when the umpire didn't give it out and she'd be blowing up and we'd look over on AMS and it was going down leg side a mile. So those types of teammates to be with, they always made the game better when it was when you might have been losing. So, yeah.
You wouldn't have had DRS at that level, but would she have been the one that was like, would she have been the one that's like, yeah, send that one upstairs. We're going to have a look at it. Would she have been the one that's like, time?
She would have taken every DRS without a doubt, not even consulting with the keeper or the captain. She'd just go upstairs straight away. So that's why she's one of my favourite teammates to play with. Yeah.
Now, one more, I guess, on your cricket future. Now, do you have a long-term kind of overall goal that you really want to achieve?
Yeah, look, I think as a young kid, as a 14-year-old who sat in a conference room in New South Wales set up and saw the chance of playing for Australia, I've kind of always had that in my head. And that is something that is really hard to get to. But I think the beauty of we're starting to see new competitions arise, like the 100, to be a part of something like that, that kind of suits your game. I think I see myself as a quite aggressive T20 player. So to have like new, exciting short format competitions kind of come up, it makes you think that the opportunity to ultimately play for your country is definitely there. So for me, I think it's about, you know, taking those opportunities and seeing where that takes me and putting my name out there. But the ultimate goal is obviously to always play for your country, to get that baggy green in an Ashes, probably a home Ashes. Like that would be an absolute dream of mine. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful. But now I guess to wrap up the interview, we like to do some quick fire questions, some cricket related, some not cricket related.
We're going to start with the cricket related one. Red ball or white ball cricket?
Red ball. Yeah, for sure. I'm very traditional. I've always grown up watching red ball before white ball. So yeah.
Yeah, agreed. All right. If you're stuck on a desert island, what teammate and what two things would you want with you?
Tilly Lug, ACT Meteors teammate. She's so reliable. She's studying law as well, so always good to have. And what would I have with me? I'd have to have sunscreen because I actually like die with my skin complexion. And also I'd probably have to have chocolate with me because I can't live without chocolate.
Yeah, fair enough. Now you're an all-rounder, so this one's quite suited to you. Would you rather win a game, let's say it's for ACT, you've not won a game all season, and this is to win your first game, would you rather win it with three sixes or with a hat trick?
Or three sixes for sure.
Confident on that one straight away.
Yeah, very confident. Yeah, usually it's a lot more close cut with the answers. Usually we get a bit of deliberation on it.
Oh, well, we have a lot of competitions of six hitting. So like who can hit the furthest in our team. So it's like such an ego thing here when you can hit the biggest six. So yeah, hands down that.
Endless who wins rights. Yeah.
Who wins those?
It's actually Zoe Cook's up there. Zoe Cook can hit a big six. She's pretty fire. Katie hits a pretty big one considering she's small, but she's got a good bat. So that always helps.
Fair enough. Favourite shapes flavour?
Oh, barbecue for sure.
Yeah, not a bad call. Beach or backyard cricket?
Backyard. But I had a front yard. So this is really weird. So I had a massive front yard. So it's kind of front yard cricket for me. But
that's
yeah.
That's fine. That works.
Road. It's like you use
the...
Yeah, no, good.
Yeah, few broken windows for sure. Yeah. Especially because my brother was left-handed, so he was always in the firing shots.
I was going to say, as long as you're not paying the insurance, you're fine.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
Oh, definitely not. Oh, yeah. we can't have that.
And Lily is now sad.
No, there's always fun.
Yeah. You're temporarily for about 5 seconds in Lily's bad books, but that's okay. Orange juice or apple juice?
Orange juice for sure.
Yeah, okay, we're back.
Redemption.
Yeah. Straight away. Lily's nodding again. Lily's nodding again. You're all good. Favorite cuisine?
Italian. Oh, can't go past like good pasta. Yeah.
Yeah, fair. Right, so let's say you're on a game show, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, that type of thing, and you've got a chance to win $1 million, but you've got to phone a teammate who's going to give you the right answer. Which teammate are you phoning and why?
Pilly Lug, because not only is she really intelligent with her answers and the way she goes about things, she just knows a lot of things, which is so random. She likes to study a lot of things, so I'm phoning her for sure.
Yeah, so you've got her on an island and you've got her... phoning a friend to win a million. So she's very resourceful with what you're saying.
She's so resourceful. She's that type of teammate that loves hiking, loves just doing random things, and I'm all for that. So she would be in my books for sure.
Yeah, fair enough. Good call. And a final one, which is the weirdest question, 1,000,000% on this set. It's a bit of a how's that legendary question. Is porridge a cereal, yes or no?
I'm going to go no, because I've grown up not eating porridge. So no.
But, fair enough. Yeah, sound reasoning. Why not?
Yeah, that's such a random question. Yeah. I love that.
I don't even know how it started. It kind of was a debate, and then we're like, you know what? This could be an interesting talking point for sure. But yeah.
I know we have a teammate here, Annie Wickman, who loves porridge. She's always having porridge for lunch, and it's just so weird. Like, everyone's having pasta or like something, you know, great, and she's eating porridge, and it's just too much. So
maybe she's the one to find out from then, if she's a bit of
she'd be the good one for sure. Yeah,
but yeah, that's all the questions we have for today. Like I said, thank you so much for joining us. It's been brilliant to chat to you, and yeah, all the best with all your cricket. We'll definitely be tuning in and watching.
No worries, thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's in the air and it's taken. What a catch. The Thunder are up and about. Olivia Porter with a simple one to begin with, but it's just pulled out one of the catches of the competition.
So that was Sydney Thunder and ACT player Olivia Porter. Absolutely wonderful to speak to her, as we said, off the top. And yeah, it was wonderful to hear her insight into her life as a cricketer and what she hopes to achieve going forward.
Yeah, it was. Like we said, brilliant person and player, and the way she speaks about her cricket is, it was really nice to hear. And it was nice to hear all the things she's taken from, you know, I guess, a short career so far. You know, she's only getting started. So to have so many lessons already and so many experiences already kind of under her belt is something that, you know, it's going to put her in really good stead for the future and when more opportunities arise. So yeah, really brilliant to hear from her. I'm really excited to see where she can go with her cricket in the future. But yeah, brilliant. Yeah, like we said, really great cricketer. But yeah, now let's talk a little bit about next week quickly, because next week is a super, super exciting episode. Now, next week, we're not going to have one specific interview. We're going to have a little bit of a collection, because next week will be 1 year of How's That, which is just so exciting. We're going to revisit a couple of old interviews. We're going to hear a best of bit. And we've also spoken to a couple of our very early on interviews and a couple of our fan favorite guests. So make sure you stay tuned for that. It's going to be an exciting one. If you enjoyed this week's episode, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or TikTok at How's That TCP. You can send us an email at howsatthecriggerpodcast@gmail.com, or you can leave a rating on Spotify as well, which would be greatly appreciated. But that is all from me this week.
Yeah, likewise, everyone. Just congratulations on a year, Lily. I know it's next week, but it's been a lot of fun to watch it all happen. And we can't wait for you to listen to next week's episode. So stay tuned and enjoy this week of cricket, everyone.